LinkedIn News.
Hi, I'm Dan Roth, LinkedIn's editor-in-chief. Welcome to This Is Working, the podcast, where my colleague Nina Melendez and I discuss a conversation I had on my video series, This Is Working. Nina and I take that conversation, we dissect it, and then we extract our top takeaways for you, the listener. Today we're asking the question, is there such a thing as oversharing as a leader? We are discussing how to get in your customer's shoes, and finally, followership. What does that term mean, and why should leaders care about it? We're going to get to all that in a second. Stick around.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by Alumni Ventures. Invest with confidence. Discover the power of venture investing with Alumni Ventures, America's largest venture firm for individual investors. Learn more at av.vc.
And here's Nina now.
Dan, I am super tired.
Really?
So let me just bring it up again that I'm training for the half marathon.
Yeah. This is going to happen, this half marathon, at some point?
Yeah. When is it? April 28th.
Okay.
By the time that this episode publishes, I will have run it. And we end near where you live in Prospect Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so come cheer me on.
Absolutely.
Okay. Bring the dog. So yesterday I ran nonstop for 2.5 hours. My knees at the end of it. And today, even going like up and down stairs are shot.
Yeah. And what do you listen to while you're running?
So normally I listen to music. Uh-huh. Yesterday, I'm listening to this amazing podcast about Enron.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. This whole journey of training for this has been, I mean, physically amazing, but also mentally, just sort of the clarity I get after a run, in like a long distance run like that, and just my overall, you know, emotional and mental health.
I ran a half marathon. I ran the Brooklyn Half
okay.
a couple years ago. And what I really enjoy doing is running on a treadmill while watching a bad movie. So that has become my thing now.
It has to be a bad movie?
Any action movie. So I've now gone through all of the John Wicks. I just watched Equalizer 3 the other day. So that's what the marathon left me with.
Do you find that after you run, you feel better?
Yes.
Well, the person you interviewed recently, she is an exercise buff.
Yes.
And she talks a lot about mental health.
Yes. And she talks a lot about empathy. And I just want you to know I have tremendous empathy for
Aww,
you
Dan.
And your knees going through this.
Thank you.
But let's talk about our guest today. This is an interview I did with Karen Lynch, who's the president and CEO of CVS Health. So CVS Health owns CVS Pharmacy, CVS Caremark. They also own Aetna, which is how Karen ended up at the company. It's the highest-ranked U.S. company ever run by a female CEO. But even more than that, she has a different way of leading than almost any CEO I've ever talked with. She really leans in on her personal story, and the mission of this giant company is sort of entwined with what she thinks is important because of her own personal experience.
Yeah, and that personal experience was a tragic loss, right? When she was 12, her mom died by suicide. She writes about this in her recently published book, Taking Up Space. And the interesting thing is she never shared about this story publicly until one day when she was president of Aetna. They're doing like a town hall, and she was sort of inspired at the town hall to kind of share this. I mean, her husband had encouraged her, but she just was like, okay, here goes. And she just shared this story and got this outpouring of support. So let's listen to this take on her vulnerability and how that worked for her.
I never really talked, but only, to my husband. And, he was the one encouraging me. At some point, you're going to have to talk about it because you're, running a healthcare company and you're talking about mental health and physical health, and yet you've suffered some, pretty traumatic things in your life. And if you really think people are going to follow you, you need to share that story. And so I did. Afterwards, there was a woman who reached out. Lots of people reached out, but there was this one woman in particular that she just lost her son to suicide. And she said she didn't want to tell people. And she was, anxious about that. And she said, you made it okay. And it is fascinating because what I've learned throughout this journey of talking about it is most people have a story to tell. Most people have a story to tell. And we're not going to get the health care that people need to support depression, anxiety, suicidal attempts if we don't talk about it. and get people the help that they need. I think there's an authenticity and a vulnerability that you can share. Like, you're not going to share, you know, I had a fight with my, husband last night or whatever. But I think there's things that you can talk about that can make a difference. And I think that leadership definition has changed dramatically throughout my career. And I think there's such an important part about being authentic and being real. Because the sign of leadership is not how you're leading, it's are people following you to support your mission. And I think that's an important point. And they want to know that person and they want to support that person. And if they don't really know you, they may not follow you. And they, you know, and then that's a challenge if you're trying to get something done.
You know, I think it's just important to emphasize this is not a small group she was talking to. Karen was in front of 50,000 employees when she revealed the story of her mom's suicide and coming home to it. She's never talked about the story anywhere else. And suddenly, in this moment that is usually totally scripted, when leaders stand in front of a company, they know exactly what it is they want to say. And she just started pouring out her heart in a way that she says to anyone else. And now she's doing it to the entire company. My guess is there's probably only a handful of leaders at most who have ever had an experience similar to this, where they've just told this unscripted moment. I can't imagine what it must have been like to be in the room and to hear somebody talking that way. And you can tell when someone is scripted and when they're not. And it must have just been, my guess is that was a moment that people have not forgotten. Do you think this is something that more leaders should be doing, this sort of like open and honest airing of personal trauma?
I think only when it makes sense. So it makes sense for her because she's leading a healthcare company. So for her to be open and advocate for healthcare and for mental health, sharing a story that she personal like that, I think sort of makes sense. I don't know that I necessarily want to know the personal traumatic details of my leadership. It might make sense if, for example, I was, let's say, struggling with a disorder or something, and then I had a leader or a manager who could come to me and personally share, like, hey, I can empathize with you. Here's my story. Like something like that, that makes sense. What about you?
I agree with you. Karen is very opinionated about the importance of vulnerability among leadership, but tying it to the mission.
Yes.
I think that is really essential. And so there was a recent study by U.S. News and Harris that looked at the most important traits for a successful modern leader. And vulnerability was number 30 of the 30 they asked for. The first ones were trustworthy, honesty, hardworking. I think vulnerability is important, but it's important married to those ones or like as a component of trustworthiness or of honesty. But you have to be, I think I agree with you. If I was sitting in the room and I was like, why is this person sharing? Like,
yeah.
This gets uncomfortable.
It gets uncomfortable. Yeah. I had a coworker, so this isn't a leader, but I had a coworker who very early on in knowing her, I mean, I just joined the company. She grabbed my arm and it was immediately like she was, what is that? Love bombing, but with like personal stories. And it made me really uncomfortable and I didn't know how to respond and I didn't know her. But then it was this fake forging of camaraderie and I could tell that's what she was doing and it was a little manipulative.
Right.
And stuff like that, like to me, are sort of red flags for someone. So it has to make, that's what I'm saying when I say it has to make sense. It's like it's either part of the mission or it's someone reaching out to you because you're going through a thing and it's like, hey, my mom also died of suicide and I want you to know that there's a path forward or there's a light at the end or something where it makes sense.
Right. You become a really successful leader if you can find that personal story
Yes. That
marries with your company's mission.
Yeah.
Like that's the best of both worlds.
I would also just caution particularly employees that it could work against you, that you can think that you're in an environment where you can share certain things like health things or personal things, but at the end of the day you should always be mindful that that when you share certain things you could be in an environment where that information could work against you.
Karen talks about this in the book. She mentions explicitly that when you are sharing it can hurt you.
Yeah.
Like this can be used against you. So it's like this word of warning.
Yeah.
Years ago, I interviewed Brené Brown, and she always talks about this idea of being vulnerable. This became like a way that people talk in business now, I think largely because of Brené Brown. And in the interview, she said, people have totally misinterpreted what I mean by being vulnerable. It is not what you're describing with your colleague, Nina. Like, it is very much this idea of saying when you disagree with a policy. or when you're not totally sure about something that's being talked about in the room.
Really? Like,
yeah. That's what she means. She was like, I don't mean you have to go and talk about your marriage crumbling. I mean, say like, I'm uncomfortable with what we're doing. That's being vulnerable. Or I don't think you're right about this opinion you just had. That's being vulnerable at work.
See, so is there a difference between vulnerability and honesty then? Because to me, that's just being honest.
Well, I think there it is. It's vulnerable to ever say something that the room has moved on with. So maybe those two
are
tied together.
Is it vulnerable to say something that's going to contradict what the majority of the room is saying?
Yeah, or if you're like, I'm not sure. I think vulnerable is, I'm not sure whether I can say this or not, or I'm going to look like an idiot. That's being vulnerable.
I see. So how do you square this then with this idea of bringing your whole self to work?
My interpretation of bring your whole self to work is make sure your personality is with you. You don't have to have a different personality at work than you have at home. You can laugh loudly. You can do things that years ago would have said, this is the corporate template and you have to follow the template. You can talk about your dog. You can have pictures of weird stuff up at your desk. That's bringing your whole self to work. I don't think bringing your whole self to work is also showing all of your vulnerabilities.
Hmm.
At least that's my interpretation of it. But similar to when Brené Brown talks about vulnerability, I think it's been turned into meaning something else, which is that we can be whoever we want to be and talk about whatever we want to at work, and you just can't.
Yeah. You know, this sort of makes me think about psychological safety and psychological safety at work. And you know, Dan, do you remember that one-on-one that we had like maybe a year ago? And you were like, so Nina, how you doing? Or something. And I just started crying. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, my God. You don't remember?
Sorry.
No, that's good. Okay. I guess that's good. It never happened. I'm just kidding. It never happened. You know, so my a former colleague left.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I was just emotional about it. Like that. It just like that day. I had I wasn't even thinking I was emotional. But I don't know, something about when you just asked me about it. And then I felt so bad because you leaned in. You were like, oh, Nina, like you didn't know what to do. And then I was embarrassed and I was like wiping my, I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know where this came from. Because I didn't want you to think that I was like not able to move on because like a colleague left. But
never occurred to me. I got to say, like in that moment, that was not a like, oh my God, Nina's showing this side that she should not show at work.
Well, I think what I appreciated is that there was a psychological safety of, I mean, clearly I felt okay doing it since I did it.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think, what is the point of what I'm saying? Well, one is like, thanks for letting me cry and also thanks for forgetting about it. But I think that's really important when we talk about bringing your whole self to work or being vulnerable at work.
Yeah.
This idea of you have to create an environment where there's psychological safety.
Yes. I think that psychological safety, to me, I have total religion about psychological safety. I think that that is one of the most important learnings over the last like decade is the importance of having that for teams to be successful. And it is very much in this Brené Brown world of being vulnerable around asking questions about things you're not sure about or raising your hand and saying, this doesn't feel right to me. That to me is psychological safety, is having a team where you can do that, where you can cry without worrying, like, how does this make me look? That was all part of the work experience. It was like you were having a normal human reaction, and we talked about it, and then we talked about work.
Yeah, but it's great that you have the memory of a goldfish.
It's so true. It's horrible. All right. I have the memory of a goldfish, but I do remember that we're going to take a quick break right now. And when we come back, more on my conversation with Karen Lynch.
Hi, I'm Kwame Christian, CEO of the American Negotiation Institute, and I have a quick question for you. When was the last time you had a difficult conversation? These conversations happen all the time, and that's exactly why you should listen to Negotiate Anything, the number one negotiation podcast in the world. We produce episodes every single day to help you lead, persuade, and resolve conflicts both at work and at home. So level up your negotiation skills by making Negotiate Anything part of your daily routine.
From the minds of visionaries to the desks of disruptors, I'm Laura Schmidt, host of the Redefining Work podcast. Join me each week as we explore the new world of work through the lens of those shaping it. CEOs, HR leaders, investors, and more. Be a part of the conversation that changes everything. Subscribe to Redefining Work today.
And we're back. We've been talking about disclosures and vulnerability, how information rolls out, especially from a leader. Karen, though, wants to also build empathy within her workforce, and she wants it for the customer. She wants her employees to really feel like they are in the customer's shoes. One of the ways she does that is by making sure that her executive team really feels what it's like to be a CVS customer. Here's how.
You know what? One of the things we did, that was a training program that we put all of our executives through. We called it A Day in the Life of a Medicaid Patient. And we simulated the whole experience and what we wanted our executives to see what it was like and how they interacted with our company. And it was really to, one, teach empathy, two, to look at our processes and make sure that they made sense for the way customers engage with us. And it was enlightening for all of us. As much as you think you know how a certain population will interact with your company, as much as you think you put the processes together, they may not always be right. So it gave us the ability to change out some of the things that we were doing. But I remember what was fascinating to me was just the debrief of the entire executive team where we were, wow, we've really never understood it until today. I highly recommend doing those kinds of things, A Day in Life of a Customer.
I have to think that this is probably one of the hardest things to ask your employees to do, because how do you measure success there, or how do you prove that you've done it? You know, how does it show up in the numbers? So I think the only way you can actually do it is by setting the tone from the top. One of the things that Karen does is she answers customer emails. Not all of them, but she at least looks at all of them that come in and she routes them elsewhere.
Yeah.
When I talked to the CEO of Delta, he mentions he does the same thing. So there's something about this idea of making sure your teams know that you are listening to customers, that when they complain, it is going to get to you and you are going to read that and you are going to deal with it. I think that's important and it kind of sets the tone, because otherwise I don't know how you enforce it.
There is this great story of the Amazon founder, Jeff Bezos, where he was at a table with his customer service people and they were saying, oh, the wait line is only like 10 seconds before they get helped. But he was looking at anecdotal responses from customers that were saying, every time I call the helpline, I'm waiting for 5-10 minutes, blah, blah, blah. And his colleague was like, no, no, it's not. It's only 10 seconds or so. So Jeff right there goes, well, let's try it out. And he called the phone. He like called Amazon customer service. And lo and behold, he was waiting for like 10 minutes. So I think there is something so powerful in the CEO just being like, I'm going to look at what the customers are saying, because the anecdotal evidence versus like data can be sometimes like a complete discrepancy.
Totally. It is such a good point. And I can't remember who said this now. I think it was a Bezos line that if there's a discrepancy between the anecdotes and the data, trust the anecdotes.
That's Bezos.
God, that was, okay.
And that was
so we're telling the same story.
That
here.
Was the story.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the things that Karen does is she says, I want you to try to get a prescription filled when being on Medicaid. Here's a card that you can use to go into a CVS, try to get this filled and see what happens. And she runs her executive team through these things where she's like, you are now a customer, go and try this. And there is like, you have to force that kind of a culture into a company, I think, because it is so easy to be in your cubicle, to run through your Excel docs, but for the customer, they are not an average.
Yeah.
They are like, my experience is the only experience that matters.
Yeah.
So if you're the CEO and you're saying, we have to listen to every customer, we have to empathize with every customer, I mean, that's the best.
So how do you make sure then that your direct reports or your executives are implementing what they're learning?
I think you have to just repeat constantly that you are doing this. You have to tell people stories at these all hands. You have to send emails around in the company and say, I just got this. What's going on here? I mean, another Bezos one is he would just send emails to people with a question mark. A customer would send him a direct email and he would just forward it to someone, put a question mark on it. And for the employee who's getting this, like, oh my God, I don't even know like what to do here. And this idea of like, I am listening to the customers is it. That is how you set the tone. And so as an employee, you would rather make sure that you are dealing with these problems before your CEO hears it.
Yeah.
So either you can do it because you believe in the idea of listening to your customers, or you can do it out of total fear that your CEO is going to send you a question mark email. That's the way this happens.
So look, we talk about being in the customer's shoes. What about being in the employee's shoes? Do you think that there are times where executives don't know or don't remember what it's like to be like an employee, what it's like to be a direct report, and that maybe they should spend time in the shoes of just an employee.
Yeah, I got great advice from someone once that if you ever have someone like quit a job, or if you have two people quit that same role, it is incumbent on you to go and do that role yourself. That once is a problem, twice is a pattern, and there's something wrong with this role. And you need to go and just take it on. And once you do that, you will realize why people are quitting or unhappy in these positions. And so that is goes back to this idea of walking in the shoes of your employees or your customers, is you got to do a little bit of that. You have to like know at least a little bit of what it's like. Most companies have something where they're doing some kind of a pulse of their employees.
Yeah.
What are employees feeling? What's bothering them? What's working? What's not working? So you got to pay attention to that for sure.
Have you ever, I mean, now it's maybe a little hard because you have so many people report in your organization, but when you were a smaller team, if someone quit, did you ever just like grab coffee with them and say like, hey, now that you don't work anymore, like, can you give me honest feedback on X, Y, and Z? Or
yeah, I almost always try to do that. So
wow.
Someone just left the team on Friday and we sat down and I was like, tell me everything.
Wow.
And that's the time. And what you find with that is that often they will, when people quit, usually everyone else that wants to quit or is thinking about quitting or is unhappy will gravitate. They're like, they become, as soon as you announce you're quitting,
yes.
You become a magnet for complaints.
Yeah.
And so everyone comes to you and they're like, this part of my job sucks and this sucks and this sucks.
Yeah.
And so, and the person who's quitting has nothing, no skin in the game anymore.
Yeah.
And so they're usually willing to tell you.
It's the best time to tell. Right. They'll be completely honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, something Karen brought up unprompted during your conversation was the importance of having leadership that makes confident decisions, just like being super decisive.
Totally.
I feel like she brought that up like she wanted to say, you didn't ask about that, but she sort of interjected that. So I felt like it was something important to her. Let's take a listen on why she feels very strongly about this being a pivotal skill.
You need to be able to make decisions and move on. And all of those are important parts of leadership skills. And, you know, you don't have to have hard knocks like I did, but you do have to have certain leadership traits to be a leader. And one of the most important things is it's not about who you're leading. It's really more about who's following you. And do you have that followership? I often talk to my leaders about how are you creating followership? And I talk about this in the book, right? You know, you don't lead from the front. You lead from the side and you lead from behind. And those are signs of really great leaders.
So in her book, she talks about how she came up with this idea while she was doing a cattle drive with her husband. I think they were in Montana or something. And she was, when you're doing a cattle drive, apparently, you don't go in the front of the cattle. You're like behind them or you're to the side of them. They might not even see you. But they are moving in a direction that you want them to go to without you having to be in front and be like, come this direction, cattle, go this direction. You're just kind of like gently guiding them through the periphery.
Mm.
And that's the idea of followership, is they are committed to your leadership without having to see your butt in front of them.
She is saying that it's hard for indecisive leaders to have a followership.
Exactly. And I think that it is a different way of thinking about whether you're a successful leader or not. So one of the proxies I like to use as an example is, do I hear people in meetings using language that I've used in the past or using strategic sentences that I've talked about? And once you hear people doing that, you're like, oh, great. This is working.
You've rubbed off in a way. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. And they are, and it doesn't mean that they're just like parroting what I'm saying. They are like, they've internalized it.
Yeah.
And they believe in it, and they're now using it to be able to guide their own part of the strategy or to go take it into a different team. And that, to me, is like a successful followership, I guess.
Yeah. Another way, I think, to tell is if you don't have to check in all the time.
Yeah.
Because they're doing the things that they know need to be done because you've maybe said it once, and you don't have to keep saying it.
Right. I think that is probably a good sign. My guess is that micromanagers have very little followership.
Or friends.
That's true.
What would you say are the causes for indecisive leadership?
I mean, number one is just not having confidence in yourself, is not feeling like you're supported, is being unsure of your job. I think it's tough to make calls, but that's part of what leadership is about. You never have perfect information. Bob Pittman, who was on the show ages ago, we talk about him all the time. This idea of trying to get as many at-bats as possible. You want to make as many decisions as possible because you can learn as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think for other people, like making those calls is super, super hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's harder if, for example, you have a micromanager as a boss.
Right.
Or you have people that you feel like they don't trust you. So then you don't trust yourself.
Yep.
Or if you work at a company where failure is intolerated. So then the idea, like Bob Pittman says, fail many times. Like you fail, and because you're making decisions quickly, you can just up and go to the next decision quickly.
I'll tell you something I've heard my boss say, Tomer Cohen, the host of Building One, great podcast, is there have been a couple times where he said to me, do this. Like, if I hear what you want to do, go for it. And if you fail, I'll take the blame. And if you succeed, it's all you.
Oh, my God.
And that was that's sort of like, hey, this is not, like, there is no downside to you sticking your neck out here.
That is
was
amazing.
It's a real moment of being like, oh, yeah, this is like, and even if he doesn't mean it or doesn't, like, it doesn't, I think he meant it, but even if he didn't, we go back to the psychological safety. The psychological safety being like, all right, I can take a risk here is really important. I think it makes it much easier to be a decisive leader.
Yeah. So something that Karen does, and she mentioned in the video, is that if someone comes to her and they can't make a decision between, let's say, two choices, she'll just ask them, like, what do you think?
It is a very simple question that can be very hard.
Hmm.
And you learn a lot about people when you say that. One thing I would add to that is, what do you think? And you can come back to me and tell me later how you really think about it. But I want to get your gut take right now. What do you think? Tell me later again if you still agree with that. Because sometimes in the moment we say stuff and then, you know, it's this whole thinking fast and thinking slow. Like, what you say while you're thinking fast might not actually be what you wish you had said.
Yeah. I sort of disagree. Not on the ruminating part, but on the whole, what do you think?
You hate that question.
Yeah, I don't like it. I think it works for people who really cannot make decisions. But I used to have a boss who would do that, and it would frustrate me because I would come to them specifically because I did not know what to think. I had looked at both sides, and I was looking for guidance from them. I was looking for their leadership. And so when they would say, what do you think, it made me feel like they were tossing it back on me in a way that was like, I'm at this point, I need your leadership, so please lead.
But that's part of your job, is to have an opinion about things. I think that they were probably pushing you to, like, that's how you get to the next level of, even if you don't know what to do, like, part of you has to make a call in one direction or the other.
But isn't part of their job to make that call?
I would say that is part of the job, but I would always encourage people to also tell me what they think, even if they only think 51% of that. I think it is important to hear people offer something there. When I was a magazine writer, my editor said to me, I would write these stories, long stories, and they would be, well, here's what he said and here's what she said. And my editor was like, you have to pick what the story is. You are guiding the reader through this, and you've got all these facts. You've got to decide what the story actually is. You can do what you did and just say, like, here's two things, you pick. It's fine. People do that all the time. But to get to that next level, you can say, here are two things. I'm leaning towards this. I would love to get your sense of what you think. I think that's important to move up the ladder. All right, we got to wrap up, unfortunately. We'd love to hear from you, the listener, on this. What's your take on what do you think? Let us know on LinkedIn using the hashtag #ThisIsWorking. You might hear your contributions on an upcoming episode.
Please share this podcast episode with a friend and review it. It helps new listeners find us. If you'd like to hear the full conversation between Dan and Karen, check the show notes. We'll link to it there. This Is Working is a LinkedIn editorial production. Our production team includes Sarah Storm, Stephen Valdivia, Asaf Gidron, Taisha Henry, Andres Cordona, and Lolia Briggs. Joe DiGiorgi mixes our show. Enrique Montalvo is our executive producer. Dave Pond is head of news production. Our head of original programming is Courtney Coop. I'm Nina Melendez, senior producer.
And I'm Dan Roth, LinkedIn's editor-in-chief. Be well and stay curious.